Carol joined. Anybody else on?
Me, Dinah.
Hey, Dinah. Welcome.
You know, I was looking because there were two emails today. One says Tuesday and one says today.
One's a full member and the other one's a board.
Oh, and they're both today.
No, one's today and one's tomorrow.
Oh, okay. All right. That's why I'm confused.
Okay.
I confuse That's, easy.
Confusion is something that is easy to accomplish.
Yeah, and you know, I really am sorry about that business with the SERA thing. It just did not occur to me that they were going to be like so close together.
Yeah, and I sort of knew. Tamara had asked me. I just didn't realize that the topics would be right on top of each other either.
Yeah, I didn't think so either, and because I thought this one was about digestion. I mean, about, you know, the colic and stuff. I didn't realize I was actually going to be doing a – I thought I was going to be on a panel, but not doing an individual.
Right.
It came as sort of a, woo.
Oh, yeah.
So, because, I mean, but I thought, well, I can handle it because I can do a one and two, you know, give them what I already gave Apex and then do something else for Apex that was, you know, more advanced.
Exactly.
So it didn't seem like impossible to solve. But
yeah, I didn't think it was an impossible thing to solve either. I agree with you 100%. And I just...
But
at the same time,
we've got other
external issues floating around, as you know.
Yes. Yes, indeed. And those are big.
Yeah.
Hi there, Stag.
Hey.
It's Dinah.
So are you going to be at... the ride this coming weekend?
Gothy?
Yeah.
Nope. I've got a bunch of lessons that I'm involved with, so. But you'll see Steve and Hernan and Kyle. That whole can of worms.
Oh.
Okay.
We won't quit.
Steve Pierre, he's just nodding his head.
Well, we're going to bring two hairy northern horses down and try to
get them through.
Crew form.
Anyhow, somebody joined.
Rick Wasner.
Hey, Rick. How are you doing?
Pretty good.
Hi, Rick. Dinah. So you're not going to clip?
We'll
clip lightly, but we don't want a blanket, so.
Yeah.
We'll sort of.
You got,
look,
you guys
the
get
high's going to be 63, so that's not too.
Yeah. You guys get that cold of weather in Asheville?
Oh, yeah.
The temperature.
Down in the
on Wednesday night into Thursday morning, it's supposed to get down to 21.
Wow, gee, it's only zero in Vermont.
Yeah,
funny.
Compared to Vermont, we're torrid. Who
yeah.
just joined?
Anastasia.
You still probably need a blanket, you're right.
Who just joined?
Anna.
Anna, oh, welcome.
Thank you.
So how's the weather out in Arizona?
New Mexico, it's better.
Mexico.
It was very cold for a week. It was so cold I didn't ride, and I ride in anything. But
okay.
Now it's better. It's in the 40s.
That's acceptable, yeah.
Yeah, much better.
Is there anybody else on? Also known as, did Art join?
Not yet, as far as I know. When are you guys coming down?
We leave Thursday before daylight, which isn't to say that we're leaving the earliest thing in the world, but we're going to try to get out of here by around 5:30.
And what is it, about a 9-hour drive for you?
9.5 is what I think with the stops we'll likely make.
Yeah. So not awful.
Yeah.
Interesting. You all, actually everybody on the phone probably appreciate the we're letting a couple Brits ride a couple of our younger horses, and you know, they do well, and they may ride them in the Kentucky. Mm. If the Brits decide they can't afford to ship horses over, but the the interesting thing is one of the things they're requiring is they want the horses to do novice level dressage test at their next in the horses that are going to gather in Great Britain for a training session. So we may videotape our horses doing a dressage test to send it over.
I wonder what novice level is over there. I had a question for anybody who has any thoughts on it. I laid my hands on something that is a worming, online deworming and vaccination plan. And I didn't know if I should send it to you guys and put it up, if anybody has any interest in that, sort of the latest and greatest of what they're thinking about now.
Sure. Well,
that would
be great.
That would be interesting.
I can do that. I'll send it to the link to Cheryl right now.
Okay. Who joined?
John Marsh.
Hey, John. Welcome.
Thank you.
I don't think Art's on yet, so we're doing a little bit of a chit-chat, and Stag is offering to call Art, so I'm going to let him do that.
Okay.
And while he's doing that, I'm going to ask John about how the party for the Old Dominion was this last Saturday.
Oh, we had a great time. It was a good party.
Good.
It was very, very much fun. We had a good time.
No, I don't.
It was at that party 7 years ago that my sister realized that she couldn't walk, and that's when she found out she had cancer.
Oh, my God.
So that party means something to me.
Mm.
Do we have any interest in a biosecurity calculator? I don't think so, do we?
A biosecurity calendar?
Yeah. I'm trying to figure out... Oh, it's about, biosecurity. Management practices that reduce chances of infectious diseases. Most of us keep our horses out, so this is more of a racing stable sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we want that, do we?
Mine are out in a million miles from anywhere. They'd only get in contact if I was at Rise or something.
Yeah, that's what I think. I can't see any reason why that would be of interest. So I'll just send this other one, which does look somewhat interesting, and of course everything need to take it with a grain of salt. So. But this is researched from the University of Guelph, so not
okay.
Just somebody's light opinion.
Thought.
Not somebody who's selling dewormers or vaccinations.
You got it. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Okay, you should have it, Cheryl.
Yeah, okay. I don't have my computer here, Digus. Hang on a moment. I've got to explain something to Stag.
You know your member login?
I can't find it. They've changed the website.
Stag, you know your member login. Go to the member login thing, do the login, and it will become a lot more familiar.
Where are you in Arizona?
The login.
I'm in New Mexico, actually.
Oh, New Mexico. She said Arizona. It's stuck in my brain.
Yeah, it's at 7,000 feet, and so people think we're down here, and we're not.
Where is it?
It's in the northeast corner in the high plains. We're at 7,000 feet. So
you get cold.
Yeah, so it gets cold. It does give my horses all sorts of great conditioning with the altitude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
And we're 3 hours from Santa Fe and 3 from Colorado Springs and 3 from Amarillo.
Wow.
So we're really in the middle of nowhere.
Are you in mesquite country?
No, not a whole lot. We have a other piece of our ranch a little to the east that has more mesquite. But here it's mostly grasses, and then we have some trees on the mountain and a few cactus, but not too many.
But not really, really dry.
It gets dry. Well, we have 16 inches of rain on average, and
that's pretty dry.
Does affect our cattle business big time sometimes.
Yeah, I bet it does. So you run cattle?
Yep, we do.
Herefords or?
They're Herefords and Red Angus cross for the most part with us. Every now and then, a few other things thrown in.
Cool.
And we're going more using the Red Angus bulls. I'm trying to be the first of three generations of women in my family to actually make money in the cattle business.
Oh, I know.
Good going.
And it's always next year.
Not a second.
Have you ever used Beefmasters?
Yeah. Early on, we did a little bit. My mother tried to run Simmental bulls out here because she had some fancy ones, and that was a disaster.
Oh, because they just weren't sturdy enough?
Their calves were too big at birth,
yeah.
And that made problem, and then they didn't grow fast after that.
Yeah.
They had a real wreck one year.
I had a friend who was, we had Angus here, and then switched over to, you know, he tried to cross him with Charlet, and then that was, you know, exactly what you'd expect, and then switched back to try to put Beefalo in them, and then that was sort of a pretty nasty looking item, and then because it's so hot and wet here, you know, they threw in some Brahma, and God, they were the ugliest looking things you'd ever seen.
Wow.
And then,
interesting, some people here breed the black Angus to the Charlet, and all the babies are white.
Yeah. And not attractive. But they're not supposed to be attractive necessarily. They are for eating. So.
I see. I didn't get that close to them to really evaluate them. You can see the colors in the field.
Yeah.
One. Some of our neighbors.
And the moderator code, if you want to try the moderator code.
What kind of electrolytes do you guys use,
Lee?
I use the Enduramax.
Enduramax Plus or Enduramax and mix it up yourself? Or
mix it up myself usually.
Uh-huh.
Some, every now and then I'll get a tube to take on the saddle, but not usually.
And do you do anything to buffer or?
Not much. I usually mix them most recently with molasses because that's what Jeannie Waldron told me the pH was better.
Uh-huh.
Than applesauce or yogurt.
If it doesn't work,
and better than applesauce or yogurt?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's such a small amount. Well, it depends. How much are you giving?
How much of the electrolyte?
Yeah.
Well, it's usually a scoop and a half. And normally I usually only give it at the vet checks unless it loops about 20 miles or so. And then I'll give it one halfway through somewhere.
So about an ounce and a half in a 60cc syringe with molasses?
Yeah. It's not a lot.
Yeah, Art's been trying to get on, but somehow or another the...
Because he's Canadian.
Yeah.
It may be something like that.
Yeah, but Art, he was able to get on the board call, which he used the same thing, don't you, Cheryl?
Yes.
Yeah, so something's weird.
Well, that is weird.
But anyway, he's...
Huh. He's tell him to drive
the moderator code. If that doesn't work, then I'm going to conference him on here.
In which case, everybody's going to have to put on their really good ears.
Yeah, you'll have to speak up a little bit because the quality won't be quite as good.
Mm-hmm.
He
can always drive across the border.
Okay, well, he hasn't... come on yet, so I'm going to try to bridge him on. Hang in there.
Hey, who joined?
Art King, finally.
Yay, Art.
The leader code worked. I don't know why the other code wouldn't.
Okay, I'm glad.
We think it's discrimination against Canadians.
Oh, I see.
He wouldn't. Hi,
just,
Art,
because we, just because we didn't vote for your president.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Get him.
Never vote for an American president. That's my...
not when you're a Canadian.
Probably not.
Anyway, I guess we're ready to start, are we?
Yes, please.
And I presume people got my email with the attached note outline?
Thank you.
Yep.
Okay, so we'll follow along with that. And unless there's any pressing questions or obvious misunderstanding, I think if we wait until the end for questions, because if somebody has a question, it may get answered later. Fair enough.
Okay. Although, let's phrase it this way. I would like people to feel free to interrupt if need be, just because sometimes points of clarification really help right there.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's what I say, if it's a clarification. But, well, I don't know how many people have had a chance to read the notes, but I think it's, it's sort of an A to Z of how to use. And as you know, I didn't mention any particular product because I realize that people use a lot of different products. So we'll assume that they're using a product that works and they just want to make it work better.
Yeah.
And I can answer some questions about different products, because I've certainly seen most of them used properly or improperly, over the years. I gather everybody knows who I am, do they?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay.
So a quick introduction, we'll enjoy it.
What's that?
Stag, why don't you do the introduction?
I'll let Art do his own. We'll enjoy it.
Well, if most of you know me, you know that I've had a lot of rides, and my main interest in electrolytes started with when I met Gail Ecker back in the early 90s, and then I subsequently helped her collect samples for her research project. Some of the samples, I didn't collect them all by any means, but she collected hundreds of or thousands of samples from hundreds of horses, and many of the horses were the same horses at different rides across Canada and some in the United States, which we'll talk about later. And from that, the electrolyte known as Performanwin was developed. Buckeye Feed sponsored some of the research, and as a result, when she developed a formula for use in horses, it was marketed through Buckeye as Performanwin. And her research basically followed the same principles as was used years ago whenever Gatorade was developed for human athletes using the Florida Gators as the guinea pigs, quote-unquote, of the day. So anyway, that's sort of where I come from on this. And while both humans and horses sweat when they exercise, there's a big difference. And I think most people certainly that work out of doors and exercise outdoors understand what happens when you lose a lot of sweat as a human. But there's some important differences with horses that mean that while some of the basic principles apply, the treatments aren't necessarily the same. It's also important to note that in addition to exercise, if a horse is being transported, it's also sweating. And further down in the notes, you'll see that some research has suggested that 4 to 6 hours on a trailer is the equivalent of riding your horse for about an hour at moderate exercise. So if you're on a long transportation trip, you should be considering administering electrolytes along the way as well, and we'll discuss that later. Sweat losses lead to a loss of sodium, potassium, chloride. Mainly those are the three main electrolytes that are in the sweat. And with those loss of electrolytes, you get decreased performance. There's a loss of water, which results in dehydration. The loss of electrolytes also results in acid-base changes. Electrolytes have either a positive charge, such as sodium, potassium, and to a lesser extent, magnesium and calcium are lost to a lesser extent, and they have a double positive charge. Chloride has a negative charge. And those positive and negatives are responsible for maintaining acid base. And as those positive and negative ions are lost, you get acid and base changes, which can result in metabolic problems. And you also get shifts of fluid from the extracellular fluid, which is basically the fluid that's in the bloodstream, in the intestinal tract, and around cells. And then the other fluid system in the body is the intracellular fluid, which we can't measure very readily, unfortunately. And that's the fluid inside cells. And there's fluid shifting in and out of cells on a constant basis. The electrolytes shift with it. And then when the animal starts to sweat profusely, that upsets that mechanism as well. A horse that's exercising loses about 10 or 15 liters of sweat an hour. A liter is approximately a kilogram. So that means that they're losing 10 to 15 kilograms an hour. A kilogram is 2.2 pounds. The horse, of course, is going to be drinking and eating during exercise, and so it will replenish some of those losses, but it will not replenish the entire loss. And as a result, you can get a net loss of between 5 and 10% of the horse's body weight or more after 50 to 100 miles of an endurance ride, and that's a net loss. The overall loss would be a lot more if the horse did not eat or drink at all. a 400-kilogram horse, which is 880 pounds approximately. That's basically one of the smaller endurance horse, or maybe an average-sized one with the smaller ones that we're getting today. 5 to 10% net loss amounts to 20 or 40 kilograms. And when you look at that in water, that can be between 5 and 10 U.S. gallons of water. That's you know, the average size water bucket that you see people carrying around on a ride. Larger horses, thoroughbred, for example, 500 kilograms, that'd be a small thoroughbred. 5 or 10% net loss would amount to 13 gallons. It's been shown in humans that 3% dehydration results not only in reduced physical performance, but also reduced hand-eye coordination. And in fact, the people at Guelph who worked with Gail, her professor, Mike Windinger, they're working with hockey teams right now because they noticed that some players during a hockey game, their hand-eye coordination isn't as good at the end of the game as it was at the beginning, and that's because they can be losing up to 5% of their body weight if they're sweating profusely and not drinking enough fluid. So rather interesting. When you take a look at the endurance horse, if you see these horses that start to stumble and fall in the last, say, 10 miles of a 50-mile ride or the last 25 miles of a 100-mile ride, it could very well be because their dehydration is reaching that 5 to 10% level. And in their case, you know, where they're looking and where their foot lands doesn't always match. You get horses spooking more sometimes, and that can be because what they would normally interpret as being, you know, just, you know, something that they're not afraid of, their cognitive process doesn't work as well as it normally would with the dehydration, and they start to fear monsters in the woods. As I mentioned before, humans' sweat is not the same as horses. Human sweat is hypotonic, which means it contains more water than it does electrolytes compared to what's in the bloodstream, whereas a horse's sweat is hypertonic, which means that the sweat is more salty than the blood is that's producing the sweat. And as a result, when a horse sweats, its system doesn't get quote-unquote salty, and therefore the horse does not get thirsty. So in order to make a horse drink when it's getting dehydrated but not drinking, you have to replenish the electrolytes, and if you replenish the electrolytes sufficiently, then the horse will start to drink. And so it's a matter of getting the horse to drink and then keeping them drinking. What's the best electrolyte product to use? Well, there's no question that ordinary salt, sodium chloride, will certainly encourage drinking. But we have to add potassium to it because the sweat contains a significant amount of potassium. In fact, in horses, the sweat contains probably 6 or 7 times more potassium than human sweat does. An electrolyte mixture should contain sodium, potassium, a small amount of calcium, a small amount of magnesium. The chloride in the electrolyte comes from the fact that the electrolyte would be made up of sodium chloride and potassium chloride. And there needs to be a small amount of sugar in the electrolyte to make sure that it's going to get absorbed from the gut whenever the horse gets it. The electrolyte should not taste sweet. It should taste salty. If it tastes sweet, it's got too much sugar in it. Some of the problems that you run into...
Should it be unpalatably salty, Art?
Pardon me?
When you say it tastes salty, should it be unpalatably salty, or should it be just ordinary?
No, it should be palatable. I'm going to come to that in a moment, that it should be palatable, and it certainly shouldn't be bitter.
Right, okay.
I'll come to that when I talk about how you mix your electrolytes up, but it should not be... you should be able to wet your finger and put it on your tongue and feel that it's salty, but it shouldn't be so bad that you go, ooh, I wouldn't want to take that. It should be palatable as a powder.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that doesn't mean you'd want to eat a spoonful or two of it, but at least it shouldn't be bitter or burn your mouth or whatever.
Right.
One of the problems we run into with electrolytes, somebody will show me their electrolytes at a ride, and I take a look at it, and the label doesn't really tell you a lot. And part of that is because there aren't a whole lot of laws around the requirements of what must or must not be on an electrolyte label, depending on the jurisdiction. So you need to make sure that you know what's in your electrolyte. Some electrolytes just are not appropriate for horses at all. There's an electrolyte. In fact, they sponsored the Canadian team when we were out in Carson City in 91. The name of the product was Select, and we worked out that we need to give about 80 or 90 syringes at a vet check because it was there was such a small amount of salt in the product, and the main ingredient on the label was in fact sugar. The electrolyte obviously has to be soluble. There's some chemicals, some products out there that when you put them in water, they don't dissolve because they're not soluble. They are sodium and potassium salts and calcium salts, but they're not necessarily highly soluble. If you put your electrolyte in water and you see a little bit of a sediment, that can be some of the carriers that may or may not necessarily be soluble. So the fact that it doesn't all dissolve does not mean that it's not a good electrolyte. Some of the electrolytes, the pH is either too high or too low, and those would be the ones that would burn your mouth when you put them in. They'd have a caustic taste or a bitter taste, as in addition to the salty taste. If an electrolyte is buffered, that's good because then you don't have to worry about pH changes. You may have heard of some people adding Maalox or antacids, Tums, that sort of thing to their electrolyte. To help buffer them, but that's not necessary if you have a buffered electrolyte. If an electrolyte that has no sugar or not enough sugar, that can be a problem. Or if it has too much sugar, then too much sugar, unless you're giving a lot of electrolytes, there shouldn't be enough sugar in electrolyte that you're going to put the horse into a hypoglycemic, like the so-called backlash that you get when you take a whole lot of sugar and then the insulin kicks in and all of a sudden you get less energy than you need instead of more. There should never be enough. I don't think there's any electrolytes that has that much sugar in it. But if they have more sugar than salts, then you're wasting your money. You're supposed to be buying electrolyte, not a source of sugar. But you do need some sugar because the cells that are going to get the electrolytes out of the intestinal tract, and specifically the stomach, into the bloodstream quickly. If there's a quick source of sugar there, that'll speed that process up. And I've already mentioned that the electrolyte should be palatable. All of this means that you need to learn the labels, and when you have a choice of looking at various electrolytes, if you look at the labels, you can and understand what they mean, you can soon find out what concentrations are in the product. Assuming that the labels tell you all that information, which they should. If they don't, then contact the manufacturer or consider getting a different electrolyte. The electrolytes, the sodium, potassium, and chloride should be balanced to match the losses that you're likely to get in sweat. I think most of the common electrolytes that endurance riders are using now are fairly well balanced. In the Enduramax, to back up a step, back in the 80s, for those of you riding then, you may recall before there were many commercial electrolytes available, they had the so-called Carey-Ridgeway mixture, which was half ordinary salt, half light salt, and a mixture of dolomite, which was the source of magnesium and calcium. And we used that for many years, and then Jeannie Waldron came up with a product called Endura Lights, and that was based on a product which some endurance riders had been using, which was an electrolyte bolus that was manufactured primarily for use in dehydrated calves, and that company stopped making that particular product. And as a result, she knew that it worked in helped in horses, and Jeannie took that formula and created it into a powder and sold it as Endurolites. And then subsequent to that, fine-tuned the formula and came up with Enduramax. There's Ride Light Now, Ride Right. Perform and Win, of course, which I helped do it. The Gail Ecker on the research. Those are some of the ones that come to mind that I know riders are using and with reasonable success. Yes.
I think you made this point, but it might be worth reemphasizing that it's really important to understand the amounts in addition to the mix for example, performant when, you know, you need more of it because, you know, it has the has more sugar or whatever to help absorption.
Well, yes, and not only that, but with the performant when was specifically formulated so that if you put one scoop in 1 liter of water, it was isotonic. In other words, it was just like drinking, say, Gatorade for a person. And in fact, when I'd be working with Gail and running around and gathering up blood samples, and I know you, Stag, and maybe some other riders on the call had your horses on that program when we were collecting the samples. And I'll never forget the day in, we were out in Utah in 95, I think it was 95, at the Race of Champions. And one of the people that was coming to gather up the blood samples as I was collecting them knew that I was thirsty and said, "Here, Gail says drink this." And it was just looked like an ordinary water bottle. And as soon as I drank it, or started to drink it, I recognized the flavor of the performance win. And she had mixed it up for me to drink. And if you drink it up, if you mix it a little less concentrated than we do for horses, it's basically the same as or similar to the Gatorade. It certainly tastes a little bit different, but once you knew what you were having, and I knew she wasn't trying to poison me, so. But yeah, it is important, and I'll come down to that when we talk about dosing. It's going to be up to you when you're using your electrolyte to figure out what a dose is of the particular electrolyte that you're using, and I define what a dose is. And then, but that a dose of electrolytes, which we'll come to, I'm getting ahead of myself here, but when I talk about a dose of electrolytes, I'll be talking about the amount of electrolyte that you'll have to figure out how much powder is in that. And once you figure out how much powder is in a dose, then you'll know how many, and then you follow the principles that I've outlined, then you'll know what dose your horse should be getting. And that dose should contain the same amount of electrolyte as somebody else's dose, but it may not be formulated the same, if you understand what I'm saying. And I'll explain that more when I come to that section. Anyway, getting back, it's important to make sure that the product you're using is in fact balanced to make up for the sweat loss. And I think most of the more commonly used electrolytes do that. And I think what's happened over the years, if an electrolyte was working, people used it. If it wasn't working, they found one that was. And so as a result, the ones that aren't working, you just don't see around as much. They should be used. You should understand how to use the electrolytes when you're transporting your horse, before the ride, during the ride, and after the ride. And also, Gail's research found out that there was a difference in not only the what the electrolyte, sorry, there's a difference in what electrolytes are required by the horse, because they do sweat slightly differently if it's hot, dry versus hot and humid versus cool and what doesn't matter whether it's cool and dry or cool and wet, but the cooler weather, and by cool I mean in the 60 or less, as opposed to hot and dry, which would be summer conditions with low humidity, or hot and humid where it's both relatively warm and high humidity as well. There's actually three different situations, and you may find that your horse performs quite well under one situation, and if you don't change the way you use your electrolytes, you're going to find that when you get into another situation, especially if it's more if it's hotter or more humid, that the horse needs more of the electrolyte. And you may have to do some fine-tuning of the electrolyte, which I'll get into. It should be a water-soluble product, as I mentioned before. It's very important. If it's not water-soluble, it won't be absorbed when it gets into the horse's stomach. And as I said before, don't be concerned if there's a small amount of unabsorbed material, like a bit of a sediment, because there may be some fillers or something in the electrolyte that aren't soluble. But the sodium chloride, the potassium chloride, the source of sodium and potassium, which in most of them is chloride, should be soluble. And the sources of magnesium and calcium should be soluble as well. And some of them were using carbonate salts, which were not soluble, but the citrates and so on and acetate salts that are used are soluble. It should be isotonic when you get it mixed up. At least it should be isotonic in water. In other words, and that comes back to the balance. So that if you mix up, if you take an, whatever the amount is that's required, and in the case of performance, when it's one scoop to a liter of water, that forms an isotonic solution. If the sodium and potassium ratios were out of balance, then it was more concentrated, then it wouldn't be isotonic. If you can find an electrolyte that's already pH balanced and buffered, that's good. That saves you having to use Maalox or Tums to buffer it. And as we mentioned before, it should be palatable. And one way to determine if you don't like the taste of it as powder, if you mix it up one-to-one in water and see if that makes it any more palatable. Once again, it shouldn't be something that you'd want necessarily want to drink a lot of, but it shouldn't be burning the inside of your mouth or have a severe bitter taste. Okay, I'm going to explain here what I mean by a dose of electrolytes, because a dose of performanwin, for example, is three scoops, but three scoops of another electrolyte product that was more concentrated than performanwin is would not be a dose. So from now on, when I talk about a dose of electrolytes, I'm talking about the amount of electrolyte powder, whatever brand that you're using, that would make a 1% solution when you mixed 1 ounce with 100 ounces of water. Or in the case of, if you're metric like we are in Canada, it's a 10-gram mixture of your electrolyte in a liter of water. But it's a 1% weight by volume solution. And that is the dose. So, and most manufacturers do give you, they tell you what they consider to be a dose of their electrolyte. And it should be a 1% weight per volume solution. And having figured that out for whatever electrolyte you're using, for an endurance ride, under normal conditions, you'd be giving at least one dose of electrolyte for every hour of exercise. And in the very hot, humid conditions, you might up that to two doses per hour. Now, that doesn't mean you have to give the two doses at once, because we say further on it's important to give small amounts frequently. But if you're doing a really fast 50, 5 hours of 4 to 5 hours of riding time, 5.5 hours maybe if it was mountainous, and you're up front and it's really hot and humid, you want to be giving upwards of 10 or 12 doses of your electrolyte through that ride, whatever that dose of electrolyte would be. Okay, when to administer them? First of all,
up one pace.
Yes.
The 1% weight per volume thing. You were saying in, say, U.S. units as opposed to everybody else in the world, it was 1 ounce per what?
A 1% solution would be 1 ounce per 100 ounces of water.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, got it.
But now I'm talking 1 ounce of actual electrolytes.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's some, see, maybe I should explain where that comes from. Normal saline, and I'm sure you've heard of normal saline, the stuff that you would use to rinse a wound or wash your contact lenses in, that sort of thing, run intravenously. You know, you're going to see somebody in the hospital, they got normal saline running in, and of course that's what we run into the horses. It may have other electrolytes and so on in it, but it's normal solar or normal saline solution. That's about 0.9%, and that's about 8 grams of salt in a liter of water.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason we go a little higher than that is because we know that horses are losing more lights than they are more electrolyte than they are water, so we're trying to replenish it. Plus, 1% is easier to work with. 1 in 100 is easier to work with than 0.9 in 100, so that's why the 1 ounce. And, of course, if you use the metric system, then it's easy because 10 grams in a liter gives you your 1% solution.
Mm-hmm.
So at home...
And that would be the electrolytes as opposed to the electrolytes plus the fillers or whatever.
Exactly, exactly. So you need to figure out from the label how much sodium chloride, potassium chloride is in there. If you didn't do too well in high school chemistry and you've got to know somebody that's in high school chemistry, get them to help you figure it out. And there's lots of good information on the internet too to help you convert mill equivalents, because some labels, unfortunately, they'll tell you the number of mill equivalents of sodium or millimoles of sodium or potassium or chloride in the product. And unless you're a chemist or sit down with a calculator and figure it out, you won't be able to easily come up with that calculation. But the other thing is, most of the products do tell you how much of their powder to mix to get a liter of an electrolyte that you can use. And if it doesn't, just ask another rider, get us to help you out a ride, whatever. I think most of you know that we're more than helpful with to help people understand what their electrolyte mixture is and how to use it. The important thing is to make sure that your horses are getting ordinary salt, sodium chloride, when they're at home. I should point out that there's if your horse is not at a ride, there's probably, unless you're riding them at home too, but we'll come to that when you do an intense workout at home. But other than when you're doing exercise at home where you've ridden the horse for more than 2 hours at a time, where you're trailering or where you're at a ride, there's probably no need to give the horse extra potassium. There is lots of potassium in the feed that the horse is eating. The problem that happens is when the horse starts to exercise and sweat heavily, they can't absorb the potassium out of their food as fast as they need it. And that's why we need to supplement the potassium. But when they're at home on pasture, all they need is extra salt. And they should have regular salt, the salt comes in different colors depending on whether it's just the white salt, the blue salt that has some cobalt in it, cobalt iodized, and then the, at least in Canada, the mineralized salts are a brown color. I assume that's standard throughout North America. So you can feed white, blue, or brown salt. It doesn't matter. And the horse should have that, preferably loose blocks and licks were made for cattle because they have a rough tongue like a rasp. Horse has a smooth tongue, so their tongue will get sore before they lick enough salt off a block. In fact, you'll see horses chewing at a block often, and that means that they want salt. So try and give it to them loose if you can. If you exercise your horse intensely for more than an hour at home and it's sweating, then feel free to give them a dose of electrolytes. Prior to transport, one dose about an hour or two before transport is helpful to keep them drinking and make sure that they come off the trailer hydrated, and one dose every 4 to 6 hours of transport, because as we mentioned, an hour of exercise, of moderate exercise, is equivalent to about 4 to 6 hours on a trailer. When you get to the ride site, make sure that the horse has access to ordinary salt. If you don't have any salt, you can give them the electrolytes, but your electrolytes, of course, cost more on a... It's an expensive way to get sodium chloride, let's put it that way. So the easiest or cheapest way to get salt into them when they're not exercising heavily is just to use ordinary salt. Before the ride, the night before the ride, you can give them ordinary salt. The morning before the ride, about 1 or 2 hours before, give them one or 2 ounces of regular salt the night before the ride, and then whatever you've figured out as a dose for your particular electrolyte, give that immediately before the ride. And then during the ride, the ideal is to give small amounts frequently, but I realize you have better things to do than stop on the trail and keep giving the electrolytes. But as long as you're giving about a dose or two for every hour of exercise, and at most 50-mile rides, if you're administering the electrolytes at the vet checks, if there's two or three vet checks in the ride, that should be frequently enough. When you get to the vet check, if you have somebody meet you with electrolytes and give them to the horse immediately when you arrive, when you're about 20 or 30 minutes into the vet check, And then if it's a longer check, again, before you leave to go out onto the next loop, that's a good way to use them. A lot of people don't realize that once the ride is over, the horse continues to sweat for upwards of an hour or two. We recommend that you continue to...
On the holds, you dose when you arrive, and then like every 20 or 30 minutes during the holds.
Right.
What's the logic of the, let's just say, ongoing during the hold thing?
Oh, so that you're getting the small amounts frequently into the horse.
Okay.
Okay.
And even though at that stage, presumably, they're no longer actively losing electrolytes, this is still a replenish.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. The research that Gail Ecker did, even with people following this protocol, you're not going to end up replenishing all the electrolytes.
Yeah.
And I'll mention it now, and we'll certainly mention it again further on when I talk about the performance profiling. But those of you riders that ride in the Southeast, you're fortunate enough that there's people that bring a scale. And if you're weighing your horse and using electrolytes properly, you'll find that the weight losses aren't as heavy in your horse as they might be in somebody's horse that is not using electrolytes. So that's a real advantage at the rides that you have in the Southeast where you have access to a scale. If you're weighing your horse through the ride, you can see whether he's losing weight or not. And if he is, then you can be giving him more electrolytes. The advantage of being at the hold, especially if it's a 100-mile ride and it's an hour hold, that gives you a chance to get electrolytes into that horse about every 20 or 30 minutes. And if you give small amounts frequently, they're less likely to stop drinking or eating. One of the big complaints we get from people is that they don't want to give their electrolytes as soon as they arrive at the vet check because they won't eat or drink.
Right.
But because they think it upsets the horse's stomach, and that very well could be. But if you're using the right electrolyte that's buffered and pH balanced and palatable and so on, it shouldn't upset their stomach, and it should, in fact, encourage them to drink. And, I think we've all heard of stories where somebody said, oh, I gave him his electrolytes, and he immediately stopped eating and drinking, and then they ended up having to treat the horse. And that's not what it's about. And I'll talk further along here about some things you can do to get around that. After the ride is finished, and especially if you're standing for best condition, continue to give the electrolytes because it will really encourage the horse to drink after the ride and get their hydration level back and get everything back to where the horse feels like moving and well animated and good impulsion, which is what we're looking for, and hydration, of course, and low heart rate. All of those factors are improved with good hydration, which gives you a better best condition score. And once again, if you're if you have a long trailer ride home, you want to make sure that the horse is well hydrated before you put him on the trailer. The last thing you need to do is have a colicky horse on the way home or an impaction when you get home. And once again, we're back to that 4 to 6 hours of transport is equivalent of an hour of exercise. And then you're back home, and you start the cycle over again, making sure that they're getting adequate salt all the time and then giving the electrolytes as needed. As far as how to get the electrolytes into the horse, there's boluses, pellets, powders, paste, gels. The electrolytes come in all kinds of different shapes and sizes. You can mix them in the drinking water, and some horses, fortunately, if you give them a choice, they will drink the water that has the electrolytes in it. They seem to know they need it. You can add it to the feed slurry that you mix up for the horse at the vet check. Some people bake them into cookies and treats, and that's one way to get them into the horse on the trail. There's nothing worse than trying to carry a bunch of syringes or preloaded syringes and water on the trail, but some cookies or treats would be easy to carry in a bag. Bake them up like cookies and use oatmeal and honey as a base and just mix the electrolyte powder in it. Once again, make sure that when you have your recipe made up that you know how many oatmeal cookies or treats it takes to give, quote-unquote, a dose of whatever your electrolyte is. adding the electrolyte to a puree of apples or peaches, bananas, carrots, peas, seen all kinds of things. And some people also add yogurt, anything that'll make the horse want to swallow that mixture when you put it into his mouth as opposed to spit it out. People mix it with water and make sure that the hay that the horse is getting, if they're getting dry hay at the vet check, that it's wetted down with the electrolytes too. As I said earlier, if you give small amounts frequently, it's literally impossible to give the horse too many electrolytes, because if you give him too much salt, he'll just drink more water. And if he's at some point you'll recognize that, hey, this horse is drinking lots of water. He's well hydrated. I don't have to give him any more electrolytes. But normally during a ride, we don't see people in a situation where the horse has gotten more electrolytes than he needs. And as I mentioned before, you want to, whatever the recommended dosage is of the particular electrolyte that you're using, you certainly want to consider doubling it if there's high heat, high humidity, or if the exercise is really intense. For example, you're running up front or in the top 10, or it's a heavy exercise with a course with lots of hills and climbs, that sort of thing. Okay.
Art?
Yes.
Jim Baldwin said that some of the blood work being done on the horses that were running over in the Mideast, you know, running particularly fast, showed that the horses were, I guess we expect them to be alkalotic, right?
Yes.
And those horses were actually acidotic. And, you know, the theory was that's probably because they're running much faster than...
Yep, I would say that. Yeah, they're doing 7.5, 8-hour hundreds.
Yeah, and so if you're, where you're, say, even doing a 50 at those faster paces, should you be thinking about a different electrolyte formula, or...
No, because at this point in time, there isn't a whole lot that they've been able to find. Like, there are buffering agents, but they're probably not absorbed across the gut. So the buffering agents that they use or try to use in thoroughbreds and standardbreds are given intravenously, and there's a whole lot of debate about whether they're helpful or hurtful. But the lactic acidosis is because of lactic acid buildup, and it's hard to find something that will counteract that lactic acid. Now, the one thing about the endurance horse, they'll develop a metabolic alkalosis from a loss of chloride. So if they get a buildup of lactate, then they're less likely to develop that. Like the horses that develop thumps, that's because they've lost a whole lot of chloride. And if they get it, if they build up lactate, the lactate will offset that, and they'll instead of getting a metabolic alkalosis, if they're getting a metabolic acidosis because of the lactate, the one will balance the other, and they may in fact end up more normal. But yeah, there's no question that the endurance horses in the Middle East will have a higher lactate level because they are definitely running anaerobically. When you get into anaerobic exercise, that's when you start to get the lactic acid build up. So let's assume that you've got an electrolyte product that seems to be working well, and now for whatever reason you want to fine tune it. To make it, it's working, but not working as well as it could. In other words, your horse is still dehydrated, or some rides the performance isn't up to snuff, or if the horse isn't drinking as early in the ride as it should. And a horse should drink within the first 5 to 10 miles. We get riders come in and we'll tell them their horse is dehydrated, and they said, oh, he never drinks until he goes 25 miles. Well, I guarantee you that the reason that he's not drinking is because he didn't get enough electrolytes early in the ride or pre-ride. And if you give the electrolytes before the ride and early, they will drink in the first 5 to 10 miles. And if they don't, assuming there's water there, and if they don't, then it's because you didn't give them enough. So if your horse is not drinking within the first 5 to 10 miles, then try increasing the amount of the number of doses. So if you normally give a dose, give a dose and a half and see what that happens. But assuming you're not giving, assuming that you are giving an electrolyte that's properly formulated and balanced, as I said, you cannot over-electrolyte them, because the worst thing that will happen is you'll give them electrolytes and they'll get so thirsty they'll have to start to drink. It's like somebody eating too many potato chips. Eventually they're going to start to drink because they're going to get thirsty. If the horse isn't drinking at the vet checks, then it's probably time to take a look at, you just need to give them more electrolytes, and that may solve the problem. Or if the veterinarian tells you that your horse is dehydrated and you're not surprised because he hasn't been drinking, then that's an indication that you need to give him more of whatever electrolyte you've chosen, assuming you've chosen the right one. If you're in a situation where you think you're giving lots of electrolytes, but the horse is still showing signs of poor recovery, the gut sounds may not be good, but you know, you think, well, my horse is eating and drinking. Why'd the vet say the gut sounds weren't good? Maybe the gut sounds are good, and the horse is drinking well, but he's still dehydrated. Or maybe the horse has cardiac arrhythmias, and I'm not sure how many of you out there have experienced any of these, but all of those are an indication that your horse needs more potassium. And not necessarily just more electrolytes, but more potassium in the electrolytes that you're using. Because those symptoms, the poor recovery, in other words, the horse comes in and normally you expect his pulse to drop to 64 in 5 minutes and he takes 15. And then when you go do the CRI, it shoots back up again. Those are signs of poor recovery. Or the vet tells you the horse has the poor gut sounds, or the gut sounds are good and he's drinking, but the skin pinch is still slow, or you get the cardiac arrhythmias. All of those are indications that the horse needs more potassium. Now, one way to get more potassium into him is just give him more of the electrolyte, but maybe your electrolyte actually needs more potassium. And the way you get more potassium into your electrolyte is by using some of the no-salt mixtures, the potassium chlorides. And you can buy these off the grocery store. And I've listed the ones there that are available. No-salt, a quarter teaspoon of no-salt has 650 milligrams of potassium in it. Morton's light salt, a quarter teaspoon, has 350 milligrams of potassium, and it's got some sodium as well. So it's not like the no-salt. And then there's a salt substitute, which is similar to the no-salt, and it's just a different formulation and has a little less potassium in it. But if you look on the grocery store shelf and look for the in Canada we have something called half salt. I don't think it's available in the States, but I think the light salt in the States is the same as half salt. But look for the products that have the potassium chloride in them with either reduced or no sodium. And
this is Dinah. I just had a question I'm going to forget. You said earlier on that the potassium is intracellular and really cannot be absorbed during the ride because of the time issues, I gathered. And
maybe I misspoke. The potassium, there's lots of potassium in hay and grass and the grains and so on the horse gets. So when he's out in the field eating, he takes in potassium. That gets goes into his intestinal tract, gets digested, and there's potassium there to get into his bloodstream, as he needs it. But when he starts to exercise and loses the large amounts when he's sweating, that's when he's losing all of the potassium.
So are you saying that with potassium, it's okay to give it during the ride rather than preload it?
Oh, no, you can preload it, too. Well, there will be potassium in your electrolyte already. Like, every electrolyte has sodium chloride and potassium chloride. But okay. Some horses, using Performan Win example, when Gail formulated that, it was based on the average of the hundreds of horses that she studied. But in those groups of horses, there were some horses that definitely needed more potassium than others, and there were some horses that didn't need nearly as much potassium as others. So the Performan Win is based on what the average horse should need. And if you're giving your, let's say, for example, use performing with an example. Let's say you're competing at a high level. It's hot and humid. You're given two doses of Perform and Win, which is six scoops to your horse every hour. You know, your horse should be doing really well under those circumstances. If you come into a vet check and the vet tells you that, the vet doesn't have to tell you. You'll know if the horse didn't recover by it right away. If the horse or the vet tells you that the gut sounds are poor, or the classical thing that we used to see with Enduramax was horses had really great gut sounds. The rider would tell us that horse is drinking great, but it's got a really slow skin pinch time. That horse needs more potassium chloride. And the other one is the cardiac arrhythmias, and that's where the heart has three or four fast beats and three or four slow beats, three or four fast beats, three or four slow beats. And you can hear that when you're listening with the stethoscope, and the heart rate goes lub dub, 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 dub lub, lub lub, lub lub, lub lub. So you can hear that fast and slow quite easily when the heart's beating at, and you normally get that at the faster heart rates in like well over 64. Once the horse gets down to 64 and less, you don't pick the arrhythmias up as easily. We pick them up when we do the recovery index, and you put your stethoscope on the heart after the horse has come back. It doesn't heart rate doesn't come back to the 64 or less that it was at first, and you have the arrhythmia. And that's how you know that you need more potassium chloride. Now, if you know that your horse needs more potassium chloride because it's just one of those horses that seems to lose more potassium chloride in the sweat than normal, then yes, the mixture that you would give before the ride, the morning before the ride, would have that be fortified, I guess, for lack of a better word, with the potassium in it.
Thank you.
Okay. The other thing that you can do is the performance profiling, and I know Stag for sure, you've had it done, and Dinah, I know Steve's had it done with his horse. Gail did this performance profiling at, any of the rides where she did her research. She was weighing the horses and doing all this, but that was when she was doing the research. After her research was done, there were three particular rides in the anecdotes. I talk about some specific incidents, but the Race of Champions, which I think was in Utah in 95, not when it was at Brian Head, but the next one they had, and I think that was 95. It may have been 96 or 7, but I think it was 95. So there was the Race of Champions anyway that was out in, I think it was Moab, Utah. Buckeye were there, and we did about 40, I think we did 42 horses with this so-called performance profiling, which I'll describe in a few minutes. We did it again at the pre-ride in Winnipeg in 1998 for the FEI pre-ride that was there. I'm not sure how many horses there were. I think there were about 30 that we did on the performance profiling. And then at the Biltmore, and I forget what year it was. Do you remember, Stag? I think it was the first year it was an FEI ride, and I've got 2000 in the notes, but I'm not sure if that's correct or not. That's the year you won it.
Yeah, is it 2000, 2001 in that time?
Yeah, it might have been 2001.
Yeah.
But anyway, what the performance profiling is you weigh the horse and collect the blood sample before you do any exercise, and then you exercise the horse for about an hour and a half to 2 hours, weigh it again if you have a scale, and take blood samples again, and you repeat that two or three times over 5 or 6 hours, or a minimum of at least 25 miles of exercise. You weigh the horse again and take another blood sample about 2 hours later. You can also collect sweat, and that's what Gail did as part of her research project. In fact, she got an award for the sweat collection apparatus that she created. There were lots of people had analyzed sweat in horses prior to Gail doing her work, but the way they did it, they would tape a piece of gauze to the horse's skin, and then exercise the horse, and then take the gauze and analyze the fluid that collected. Unfortunately, what they underestimated was the amount of water that was lost, that evaporated, and therefore the sweat ended up being far more concentrated than they realized. So one of the benefits of Gail's research was that she was able to design this apparatus to collect the sweat, which prevented the evaporation, and they got a far more accurate read on exactly what was in the sweat. And then the other thing she was able to do was use this on the treadmill and collect sweat and see the differences in sweat between conditioned horses and unconditioned horses, and even how the sweat changes through exercise. But that's all something for another talk. Anyway, you can collect sweat, and that will tell you, give you a better idea of where your horse stands against the average. Of course, while you're doing all this, you continue to let the horse eat and drink and have electrolytes the way you normally would. We certainly don't want to deprive the horse of electrolytes and give an unbalanced picture of actually what's going on with this horse. You keep a record of all this. The blood samples, of course, have to be analyzed, and you do pH and check the electrolytes. The PCV, that's the packed cell volume, that gives you an idea of the amount of dehydration. You analyze for the concentration of proteins and the specific gravity. You do all of that, and with all of that information, you get an indication of how much electrolytes the horse has lost and how much water. And from there, you can calculate those losses and therefore do a better job of fine-tuning your supplement. And I know Eustag, you and Gail sat down and went over what was going on. I can't even remember which horse it was. Was it Super?
Yeah, it was Super.
Yeah, so you got to take a look at what's going on and so on. And before I get into some of the anecdotes, I just want to say that despite what some experts say, I would say that blood results are indicative of metabolic status. The one thing that Gail's research showed us was the fairly significant weight losses that these horses get. We didn't have a full understanding of the fluid shifts that occur. And if you it's hard to get people to envisage this, but if you have a horse that is perfectly normal and you exercise him for say 4 hours and he loses say 20 pounds, that is all water that has come out of that horse. So everything that's left in the horse has gotten more concentrated, with the exception of the electrolytes, which have come out. So if you take a blood sample and you take a look at that blood sample and you say, oh, everything in this sample appears to be normal, and you say, therefore that doesn't tell me anything, what you need to do is realize that you've got to take that blood sample and factor in the fact that there's a whole lot of water gone out of that blood sample, and therefore the reading that you're getting of what's in that blood sample, it's over-concentrated. And when you do the formula to recalculate what the volume of that water should be, or that blood should be, but in other words, how much water needs to be added back to this sample, and add that water back in with your calculation, then you find out that the other constituents in the blood are not nearly as concentrated as you thought. And that's what's really important with this blood analysis, is that when you analyze the blood, you also have to know how much weight did this horse lose. In other words, how much water do we have to put into this horse's system to dilute everything out and therefore get correct readings of what we've actually got in the horse.
Art?
Yep.
The one thing I wonder about, you say, horse, if you let... you weigh them and they're 20 or 30 pounds lighter, that's all water. But I'm wondering, the first weight loss you see, how much of that is poop? in the order is the horses are, you know, when they start a ride, they typically do an awful lot of pooping right away.
Yeah, and you've got to take that into account. The work Gail did, she was weighing these horses frequently, you know, before the ride, after, throughout the ride, and after. And yeah, you do get fluctuations with the amount of manure they pass, the amount of urine they pass. But through the ride, they should be eating feed back and drinking back, and so they're going to get the weight. The other, they get some of that weight back. The other thing that Gail did is that when the horse gets dehydrated and the water starts to leave the bloodstream and their blood volume starts to decrease, the proteins still stay in the blood. So if you know what the protein concentration is in the blood when the horse is normal, and that varies, there's a normal variation for that. So it's in the range of 10%. So if you don't know what it is for a horse, and a horse gets 10% dehydrated, the concentration of the those proteins goes up 10%. It still could be within the normal limit. So you have to know what's normal for your horse when it's fully hydrated and resting, compared to after it gets dehydrated after exercise. And that was one of the keys, was that Gail was able to figure out what the how much the protein concentration went up, which was then an indication of how much the water volume had gone down. And then when you correct for that loss of water, then it also shows you how much the other what the dilution is of the other electrolytes. You understand what I'm saying?
That actually makes sense.
Yeah, it's a difficult concept. The other example is if you had a little tube in your gas tank, you could be almost out of gas, but when you stick the tube down and draw out some gas and analyze it, the gas that's in your tank when it's full is the same as the gas that's in the tank when it's empty. But you've got no idea how much gas you have just by taking a sample of what's in there. So you have to have a gauge, and the gauge we use with the horse is to weigh it. Or the other gauge is to take a look at how much his protein concentration increases, because the amount of protein that's in the bloodstream is going to stay, the total amount is going to stay constant, but the concentration is going to increase or decrease depending on their hydration status. Anyway, performance profiling, if somebody's got a horse that they really want to perform at top level with, then probably the performance profiling to fine-tune your electrolytes and so on is probably a good idea. When Gail was doing it, she was having to cover the cost of renting a motorhome. She had a $40,000 analyzer. You know, your veterinarian has one that he carries around in his hand for iStats are what, $5,000 or $6,000 now, as opposed to $40,000 Nova, and they're not nearly they can be used under field conditions, whereas the temperature had to be controlled reasonably well, and Gail had to keep running control samples and so on. But I think it was costing about $300 a horse for Gail to do all of that. When we get to the anecdotes, I'll explain what we did with one of Sia Reese's horses, and I'm not sure how much it cost her, but I did it for basically going down for the weekend and having. They put me up for the weekend, and I collected the samples and then brought them back, and Gail did the analysis. And an analysis on a blood sample at your vet's is probably, maybe $20 or $30. So it can be done. You could do it at a ride, too, because if you have the weight of the horse, all the better. The main concern is to get a sample, make sure you collect it in the proper tube. It's not just an ordinary blood tube, because you want to collect it and get the blood cells away from the plasma right away, because the potassium levels especially will change, because those cells are alive and they are still there's still potassium moving in and out of the blood cells into the blood sample. So you want to get the blood cells out of that blood sample as soon as possible after you take it in order to get a really fine-tuned reading. You'll get a good indication, but it won't be 100% if the blood cells are left in the sample too long.
Yeah, Art?
Yes?
If I could just inject something here. It's really important if you're going to get samples done at a ride to communicate with a vet that's very knowledgeable, hopefully the one taking samples,
yeah,
of what you want and when it needs to be done. Because I know at one ride I was particularly interested in getting the blood glucose levels, blood sugar levels and all that, but the vet didn't understand that, and so she didn't spin it down and run it right away.
Yeah, well, and you if you're doing that, you don't.
Basically, said the horse who had. I think this is the national championship where the horse was second, but according to the blood work, of course, he looked like he was dead because because she didn't run it till the
right.
Because
those blood cells are alive and they'll still burn sugar while they're in that blood sample after, you know, while it's sitting over on a shelf someplace or in somebody's pocket or whatever. So it's that the other thing too is to make sure that you're if you're familiar with blood tubes, there's all different color stoppers on the tubes, and those stoppers are color coded, and you want to use either a green or a gray stopper tube when you're collecting the sample, and then spin it down right away and get those blood cells out of there, because the blood cells will change the electrolytes, especially potassium and the sugar. Okay, I was going to just tell you a few anecdotes. I mentioned before the Race of Champions in 1995, and just to tell you know, how this blood sampling and the performance profiling and so on, about how interesting and neat that is. At that Race of Champions, I don't know whether you remember that or not, but that was all the same. That was also the same year that Canadians lost their good horse at the Bighorn, and they'd come to that Race of Champions with one of their other. I think it was Cash, as a matter of fact, was the horse that Valerie was riding there. And at 60 miles, there was a vet check at 60 miles with a 1 hour hold. And when Gail did this performance profiling, she had three or four students from Guelph that were doing undergraduate studies were there. And this 19-year-old came out of the trailer with a blood sample in his hand, and he says, "Where's horse number so-and-so?" And it was Valerie's horse. And I think at that point they were 20 minutes behind the leader at the at 60 miles, and he said that horse is going to win the ride, and it won by well, she rode in with somebody else, and they were basically riding side by side, and the person riding with Valerie knew there was no point in trying to outrun her, so she just rode with her, and they finished well ahead of the rest of the field. In 1998, the same thing happened. I can't remember who the horse was. But at 50 miles, Glenn came out of the trailer, and he says, "I've got the blood sample for the winning horse." And we weren't so sure at that time because there were the field was pretty tight. But sure enough, that horse ended up winning the ride. The Biltmore was interesting for two reasons. Mike Lindinger came out at 50 miles, and at the Biltmore, they were using the corral down at the end of the road there, not up at the stables the way they'd done the other years when I'd been at the Biltmore. And we had our motorhome set up at one end of the corral. And of course, because it was an FEI ride, there was a lot of concern about the fact that we were taking these blood samples. And normally when we do the blood samples, we would talk to the riders during the ride and give them advice and tell them what to change and so on. Because it was an FEI ride and not everybody was doing that and so on, it was thought to be an unfair advantage. So all we could do was ask questions and gather information, and we didn't talk to the riders until the end of the ride. But Mike came out and asked me if I'd seen Stag's horse trot out, and I said, "No, I didn't." And he said, "How is he doing?" And I said, "I'm not sure why." And he said, "Well, He said if he's anywhere up near the front, he should win it because he's got the best-looking blood sample. The flip side of that was about 10 minutes later when Gail came up to me and she says, and I can't remember who the head vets. I wasn't vetting the rat. I was just there helping Gail collect the blood samples and so on. And she says, do you think they'd really be upset if you went and talked to them about a horse that is going to get in trouble if somebody doesn't do something? And I said, you know, because of this unfair advantage thing. And I said, no, I said, I'll go talk to somebody. And I can't even remember who the vets were that were there. But anyway, I remember walking up to the vets and I said, do you know where so-and-so's horse is? The horses were in the vet check and we had collected a sample as soon as they came into the vet check and then they had an hour hold. And we were getting the blood results within a matter of you know, less than 5 minutes. So these horses hadn't been there very long. So anyway, I went up and I said, do you know where so-and-so's horse is? And they said, yeah, they just took it over to treatment. The horse had started to thump and was showing mild signs of colic. And Gail was able to figure that out off the knew from the blood sample that this horse was going to be in trouble. So I thought that was interesting. The final story is an interesting one. Tom Swift had asked me to go to the national championship in 2000 and I believe it was 2002 in Kentucky and help him crew because Rita was riding one of their 100-mile horses and C was riding the other, and he didn't want to be stuck having to I shouldn't say stuck, but he was going to have his hands full crewing for both horses. So I said, yeah, I'll go and help you crew. So I ended up crewing for the horse that Sia was riding. And then I stayed. She won the won her weight division in the on the 100 on that horse. And then I stayed and crewed for her and Wave in the 50-mile ride. And she ended up winning that ride and the national championship. So she won the 50 and the 100 national championship in both weight divisions. So we were sitting around afterwards and have a few drinks around the campfire there. And she said, well, we did pretty well, didn't we? And I said, well, I can tell you how to do better. And she looked at me, you know, like I'd taken the wind out of her sails. And I can tell you how to win best condition. So that was in, the late summer, fall. So at Easter weekend, I went down to their place and she had four horses. She had a couple of endurance riders there and her neighbor, and they went out with the four horses, one of them being Wave, and went out with the four horses. And we didn't have a scale there, but they had an idea roughly of what the horses weighed. And I think Alex had weighed them at a feed mill or something. I forget what the deal was. But anyway, they had a rough idea what their horses weighed. And so we went with that weight, and I collected blood sample. They rode 12 miles. We collected a blood sample. Then they rode the horses 12 miles, collected blood samples from all the horses again. They rode them all another 12 miles, collected blood samples again, waited 2 hours, collected blood samples again. And kept track of, and it was fairly cool. So the horses weren't sweating a lot. They weren't riding really hard, but they weren't sweating a lot. And then I know that Gail sent them down a sweat collection system, and they collected sweat later, and got all the analyses done. And I don't know what Gail found, and I don't know what advice she gave to Alex and Sia. But as a result of that, Alex and Sia changed the way they were the electrolytes they were using on Wave, and he won the 100 that fall at the FEI ride, and he won the best condition.
And he looked great.
What's that?
He did look great.
Yeah, and Alex told me afterwards that they used 96 scoops of Perform and Win that day. Now I don't know whether all of that got in there, but if you work that 96 scoops out, and that was a, I would call that a heavy ride, so that'd be a ride where you'd be double dosing. If you work that out, that works out to well over your or somewhere in the neighborhood of that 6 scoops. I don't know what their total ride time was, but I would imagine that it was with the vet checks and everything, it was probably in the neighborhood of you know, roughly 16 hours. So that would be six scoops.
That was out in Oregon, right? Or, I mean,
that's
Washington.
Trout Lake.
Trout Lake.
That was Trout Lake, yeah.
You know, Wave's winning time was like 9.25 to 9.5.
And then there would have been, would there have been 3 hours of holds?
3 to 4, as I remember.
Yeah, 3 to 4. So so you're, no, it's not quite the 16 hours. Yeah, I didn't. I should have not checked the result, the ride time, to see what the time was. But I know they did quite well. But anyway, the point is that they used a high volume. And that's what we find is that usually when horses aren't doing as well as people expect, all they need to do is give more electrolytes and just have that horse drink more. And if they drink more, they tend to do better.
At that same ride, Super ran out of get up and go. We ended up finishing fourth. And I remember that he was arrhythmic at the last checkpoint. And when we started glycogen loading, and I didn't glycogen load on the last loop, which was my fault, well, miscommunication between myself and the crew. But I'm almost wondering also if
the crew wasn't with him to beat him on the head and say, your horse needs this.
but I'm also, you know, we were not electrolyting nearly that much, and that was very dry conditions. So even though the horse wouldn't have been wet, you know, they were losing a tremendous amount of electrolytes. I'm wondering if
That's what fools you in the hot, dry. You don't realize how much the horse is sweating because the water, the sweat's evaporating, which is supposed to do in cooling the horse, and because it's evaporating, you don't realize what the losses are. I think all of you have seen the that kind of a dandruff-looking dust that gets on your horse, especially under hot, dry conditions or warm, dry conditions, and that's the dried electrolytes. In fact, I was out at the AHA Championship in Oklahoma, and Todd Holbrook was there. He was one of the vets, and he had a bunch of vet students. And there was a dark colored horse, a dark bay, almost a black horse came in, and it had just this dusting of light dust all over it, especially around its face. And Todd, of course, he was observant enough to see that, so he said to the students, he said, "See that? See all that on that horse?" He said, "That's not dust or dirt off the trail. That's dried electrolytes." And Todd licked his finger and rubbed it, and then tasted it. And he tried to get the students to do the same thing. They wouldn't.
Wow.
Said, "Yeah." He said, "You got to taste it. You'll never forget how salty that is if you do it." And girls are all standing there going, "Ooh, I don't want to do that." But he was trying to teach them a lesson and just give them a quick lesson in how much salt is really on that horse's skin. So.
So if they ever get to the point where they do endurance riding, they'll be out there licking the horse's skin.
Trying to find out if he's sweating, right?
Yeah, exactly. Just how sweaty is that? How much light?
You can taste it even in the air on a road, you know, on a ride. You can tell your horse is sweating.
That's right.
A good endurance vet could tell the electrolyte concentration by licking the urine.
Pardon me?
What was that? You all could tell the real concentration by licking the urine.
Oh, licking the urine. No, Ken and Mike Beasley with their Beasley bucket, they're trying to figure out if they can tell anything from urine. I don't know. Don't know how much they've found out yet, other than there's a lot of different colors of urine out there.
Yeah.
Anyway, any more questions?
Yeah, Art, this is John Marsh.
Yes, John, how are you?
Fine, how are you? This has been very helpful for me. I certainly appreciate it.
Thank you. How was your Christmas party, by the way?
Oh, we had a good party. It was very, very, very much fun.
I got an email on Saturday morning asking me if I was going, and I looked at the clock, and I said, you know, if I left now, I could be there. But
we had a good turnout, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And a first for the OD, I think we made money on all three rides this year.
Good.
That has never happened, so, and it had to happen.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's good. No, and you know, and I've seen some changes there. You know, I told Pete Godwin. I said, you know, he needs to take that soup recipe and set up a franchise of Pete's soup and bread and soups or whatever. Any hole in the wall you could rent and sell that soup. That's great soup he makes. Of course, anything would taste good out. Yeah, anything would taste good out in that field when you're cold and hungry.
Well, you know,
anyway, you had a question, John?
Right? You know Claire's president, right?
Oh, yeah. I heard she was, they were trying to coerce her into that, so good for her.
Yep, she was duly elected.
Yeah. Good.
Well, like I said, this has been very helpful for me. I'm, you know, obviously just kind of starting out in this, and my electrolyting program has been woefully inadequate based on what we just heard, and so I'm going to make a lot of changes. But are there any other, assuming that you electrolyte enough, you shouldn't see this, but are there any other physiologic symptoms or signs that you would see other than like stumbling or the, you know, the traditional dehydration test that a horse might exhibit if they've got a problem?
If they're not getting enough electrolytes, you mean?
Right.
Well, yeah, they're going to. I mean, the horses that are really bad, they're the ones that get pulled or.
Well, I meant before, you know.
The biggest clue is skin tint to start with. If the
right.
If you're starting to get a skin tint problem, then you know that the horse needs more electrolytes. And if you've got a skin tint problem and the horse is drinking well, then you know he needs more potassium.
Okay.
I mentioned before about the Enduramax. In fact, I would come home and call Guelph or call Gail at Guelph and tell her, you know, that I was seeing this and I was trying to figure out, you know, and I called it Enduramax syndrome. These horses would have really good gut sounds. The riders would tell me they were drinking well, and I would see them at the vet checks, and they'd be drinking well, but they were dehydrated. And Gail said they probably need more potassium. And we were down at a ride in it's the old Elk Valley ride, and I was there vetting, and my wife happened to be there riding. And this girl came in with her horse. She was in the 75-mile ride, the 45-mile vet check, and it was one of these what I call Enduramax horses. The horse was drinking, had really good gut sounds, but it was dehydrated, really slow skin pinch, and a slow cap refill time. And I said, I think your horse needs more. Initially I said more electrolytes, and then when she told me she was using the Enduramax, and I started and I listened to gut sounds and so on, I said, I think you need to give this horse more potassium. And she we didn't know where to get some, but I knew my wife had some because, you know, we carry it with us all the time and when she was riding. So she went over to my wife's trailer and got the potassium. I said, just tell my wife that you need the potassium, because I didn't know what she had, whether she had the light salt or the half salt, whatever. Anyway, she got it and brought it over, and we gave it to the horse and mixed it up in the syringe and gave it to the horse. The horse went the next vet check, I think it was another 15 miles, and this was in July when it was really hot and humid. The horse went an additional 15 miles. It was still continuing to eat and drink, but when it came back, its skin tint time had returned back to normal, and the gut sounds were not as fluid as they had been. So that told me that there wasn't enough potassium to make the gut work properly and get that electrolyte absorbed. And it was just staying there in the intestinal tract. And the horse certainly wasn't going to get an impaction from being dehydrated, but its skin tint was way down. The flip side of it is that sometimes we see horses that need more sodium. They're getting enough potassium and chloride, but they need more sodium. But getting back to answer your question, some of the things you'd see, first of all, as I said before, your horse should be drinking in the first 5 to 10 miles. And if he's not, you know that he's going to get dehydrated. So that's an indication that you should be giving him more electrolytes. If you come into the vet check and he isn't drinking, or if he's and there are other things that will keep horses from not drinking too. Ulcers, You know, if they're getting colicky, and horses can get colic for all kinds of reasons, not just because they're at a ride. And so you need to be aware that there may be other things as well. But the horse should be drinking, and it should be drinking within the first 10 miles. It should have a good cap refill time. It should have good gut sounds, and it should have a normal skin pinch. And when those and good recovery. And when those things start to deteriorate, then that's an indication that this horse might need more electrolytes.
Okay.
And I really wonder how many of our, like you mentioned, the stumbling and so on, I wonder how many of our lamenesses are in fact because the horse stumbled. And so, you know, because it seems that the horses that do well metabolically also stay sound. And when their metabolics start to go, it makes you wonder, if now they're not stumbling, overreaching, all of these other things. And of course, some of those lesions we'll find at a vet check. But I mean, we're just there with a couple of minutes doing hands on. We're not doing nerve blocks and so on. And the horse can't tell us, oh, this hurts because I twisted it, when I stepped on that rock and went the wrong way. So it really makes you wonder how much of that. When they get that 3%, because when a horse is going down a trail with a rider on its back, there's no question that the equivalent of the horse's coordination is key to keep it from stumbling and so on. And good riders can sense when their horse is getting tired. They know when their horse isn't picking his feet up and when he's not putting them down exactly where he wants and so on. When he wants to walk instead of trot, or he wants to trot instead of canter, not making those flying lead changes and so on. When you feel your horse starting to go away underneath, that's probably an indication that there just isn't enough fluid in the system. If you understand mechanics at all, the hydration in your horse, that's what keeps everything fluid and moving. That's just as important to your horse as your oil and fluid and water levels and so on are in your truck. When you're going to ride, if your transmission fluid's low and your power steering fluid's low and your rear end fluid's low and your radiator's low, your truck's not going to work right. And it's the same with your horse when those fluid levels get down.
Art, this is Dinah.
Yes.
I have a question, but I also had a comment. Gail, we did the sweat thing on the treadmill with Gail.
Yep.
On two horses that were half siblings.
Right.
Both 100-mile horses.
Yep.
And they came up very different from one another. Interestingly,
yes.
The one that was a chronic thumper came up very, needing a great deal more potassium.
Right.
And the other one was within normal ranges. The one that did not thump. It was just really, really interesting.
Yeah.
So that was one thing. And I have the results if anybody ever has any interest, just to see what they look like. The other thing is when we're talking about horses going into an anaerobic state and also being in being compromised metabolically from being both ways at the same time, if you prefer.
Right.
I'm not sure how to word that. Maybe.
Yeah. Well, the metabolic alkalosis from lactic acid buildup and metabolic alkalosis from losing chloride in sweat.
Right.
And metabolic acidosis from the lactic acid that's being generated faster than it can be recycled.
Right.
Yeah.
When I would think that a horse that's running high end at the end of 100. Or doing a run out at the end of 100 could really. I'm just wondering if anybody's looked at that, what's happening to them metabolically.
No, I don't think so. I know Jeannie. I think she's done some of it with her treadmill and does her treadmill lift?
Yes.
Yeah, so she can put it on a slope. When you put these horses, that's one thing. That running on a flat is one thing, but running on a slope is another. And Jeannie was convinced, and I certainly don't disagree with her, that a lot of these horses, the endurance horses, we used to think years ago that they were running aerobically for a long time, but these horses that are cantering up hills, they are running anaerobically. Now, they're not the in North America, at least, I don't think they're running anaerobically for the whole ride. But with these times that they're getting in the Middle East, where they're running 100 miles in 7 and 7.5 hours, they've got to be anaerobic for the majority of that time.
Yeah, I mean, but if they're both, I mean, they can't have alkalosis and acidosis simultaneously, can they?
No. But what's happening is that the loss of chloride would tend to make them alkalotic, but that would be offset by the lactic acid that's produced that tends to make them acidotic. So they're actually tend to be a little bit balanced.
They balance themselves because they're going so fast.
What's that?
They balance themselves because they're going so fast.
Well, yeah, they're losing so much chloride that they're getting alkalotic, and because they're going so fast, they're building up lactic acid, and one offsets the other.
Hmm.
So maybe it's a benefit for them to be going fast and sweating. The other thing, of course, is, and of course, I don't think many of us really know what type of training programs and supplement programs the Arabs are on, because they've obviously stepped it up a notch. It's not all genetics. They've got training programs and so on that are head and shoulders above anything we're doing over here, from what based on the conversations I've had with John, at least.
What is the going back to John's question about indicators, when you see a horse that has a little bit of tremors,
muscle fasciculation?
Yeah, muscle fasciculation, I guess, is the more technical term. What is that caused by? A buildup of lactic acid, or what is that?
I think that's more potassium and calcium. See, what happens with the sodium tends to be the primary ion outside of cells, and potassium tends to be the primary ion inside cells. And when the cells contract, the potassium comes out and sodium goes in, and then the sodium pumps it back out, puts the potassium back in, and that gets things recharged for the next cycle. And calcium plays a role in that as well. And calcium is a ion that's got two positives on it. So when you've got a situation where sodium and potassium are depleted, in order for the cells to maintain their electrical balance, it's pretty easy for them to grab one calcium and keep it inside a cell, as opposed to worrying about trying to find two sodiums or kick a two potassiums to bring back in when they can bring in one calcium. The problem is when they bring the calcium in, they tend to get a tetany. And then when the potassium, if they do find potassium, and of course the cell is going to try and get relax again, because the muscle cell doesn't want to remain in a spastic state. It wants to be relaxed. And so the only way it can relax is to get rid of that calcium, and it wants a potassium in there as opposed to a sodium. So what happens when the horse starts to rest, what you're seeing is all that flickering or that fasciculation going on is all those muscle cells in there trying to get back in balance. It's sort of like when you get a twitch.
Now, will that be brought on by, like, one reason I withdrew at Tevis at like 50-some miles is coming up out of whatever the canyon is with a swinging bridge, and the horse started muscle fasciculations. And when I got to the top and rested for a little bit, they stopped. But I was also seeing after that a higher heartbeat than what I thought, even though I came to the vet check and I thought the horses looked good. So would it that been because of the? I mean, and that's a really steep canyon.
It could have been. Yeah,
like an 18 degree or something.
Yeah.
Would that be due to the lactic acid, or would it that been due to, you know, because obviously, and the Tevis you're running at low humidity and very high altitude. So
I would think that'd be more electrolyte imbalance.
Okay, so you were thinking that. so that could have been just because I should have been using a lot more potassium given, you know, what was
going on. Yeah, we tend to find that under hot, dry conditions, they do need more potassium for some reason.
Okay. One other question related to that, but let me give other people a chance, and then I'll come.
I was just going to add, you mentioned something there about notice that his heart rate was higher. That to answer John Marsh's question earlier, one of the other things to do is if you're riding with a heart rate monitor, is to watch that, and you'll see that if you're using a heart rate monitor on a regular basis. I'm not necessarily saying all the time, but on a regular basis, you know what your horse's heart rate should be for. Whatever you're asking the horse to do, whether it's how fast he's going or whether he's going uphill or downhill, how hot and humid it is, whatever. What you'll find when they start to get compromised is that their heart rate will be higher than you'd expect it to be for the amount of work they're doing. Be sort of as if you had a truck with a standard transmission and a tack and the clutch was slipping. You'd see the tack rising.
Yep.
And you know there's something wrong.
Yep, I've seen it.
What's that?
I've seen it.
Yep. So that's why it's a good idea to have a heart rate monitor. Can tell you about those things there's lots of things out there if you just learn to pay attention to. Unfortunately, some people get so caught up in the ride that they forget to listen to their horse. And very often, that rider will tell us in hindsight, I should have, the horse tried to tell me something and I wasn't paying attention. For example, the story that Stag just told, there'd be riders that would miss that, go through a vet check, and then the horse, crashes on the next loop just because, missed the warning signs. And, we catch some of those when we're vetting them at rides, but those of you who heard me give the ride talk, I press upon people that we only see the horse for 2 or 3 minutes at the vet check. The riders know their horse and they're with the horse all day, so they're the ones that should be watching for something that's the red flag that's telling us that the horse isn't doing well.
Art, if the horse is a high-strung horse, not that any of our Arabs would ever be that way. Are they going to, particularly during those first, 10 to 20 miles when, they're in the flight instinct mode, be losing significantly more of one type, either one significantly more electrolytes or more of one particular chemical?
Well, yeah, there is suggestion that if horses are, well, and people too, if they're stressed and the adrenal glands kick in and so on, that you can lose more sodium relative to potassium. So the sweat would have a higher sodium concentration if the sweat is being produced in response to it's like that nervous sweat that you get, when somebody's or the person gets, when they're upset, and then the same thing with horses. Some of this sweating that we get in horses that are being transported, we had a horse at the border here last summer. We opened up the trailer, and the horse was just water just drenched off the horse, and it's just standing there shaking. I don't know. I have no idea what was going on, whether the horse was scared, didn't like being transported, or whether the driver wasn't driving properly or whatever. But there's no question that that's an anxiety. Some of the earlier studies that were done before they had treadmills to study sweating in horses, they just give them a dose of epinephrine, like adrenaline, and put them into give them adrenaline. That would be the equivalent of getting them all excited, and they'd break out in a sweat, and they'd analyze that. And of course, now they're far more sophisticated. They can do it on put them on a treadmill and get them to sweat with exercise and so on. But yeah, if you do an internet search, you can get some of the You'll see some of the papers where they've studied sweating to determine and determining the changes and finding out whether the changes are related to anxiety or just changes in sweat makeup associated with fitness or duration of exercise and so on. So yeah, the sweat gland in all species is interesting, but especially in the horse, because it's still not sure why horses sweat out large amounts of salt. It might be the fact that they can drink salty water, whereas not that they can drink seawater continually, but they can drink from water sources that tend to be a bit salty and survive that. Whereas if we were in a situation where our only source of water was hypertonic, we'd be in trouble. Horses, they can't always choose where they have to drink. So that maybe by nature they've been selected, and they have this sweat gland that is actually a salt excreter. They weren't intended to go great distances, so it works against them to go great distances. But it might be an advantage for them when they were when they only had to go short distances, and when they just because it may have been a way for them to get rid of extra salt, so that they could in fact drink from a water source that was saltier than normal.
Interesting.
All right, I'm going to ask you a very pragmatic question.
What's that?
You've seen a lot of horses come through a lot of vet checks. Do you notice that horses tend to do better on certain products than other products? You may not know what they're getting for electrolytes, but...
No, I don't think so. I don't think I'm... You know, and I've got a lot of respect for Genie, but I personally wouldn't recommend Enduramax to anybody just because of the problems we have with it burning the mouth. Now, you can get around those things, but
that's exactly what I use, so I want to switch.
Yeah, well, no, and
tasted some. It didn't burn my mouth. I brought it in with me.
It did or didn't?
It doesn't.
Oh, it doesn't. Well, I don't know whether you have to talk to Jeannie. I don't know whether she's changed.
It might have been changed, because she told me that the formula was changed once not too long ago, and then they didn't tell her, and then she wasn't really thrilled with that, and then, you know, they changed it to something that she was more comfortable with.
Well, I know that it can burn, but there's things you can do to adjust it. But no, the Enduramax,
because I had it at the beginning.
Yeah, the Enduramax, the Performan Win, the Light Now, and the Ride Right. I think they're probably the four that we see the most of.
Okay.
But there's lots of rides that I go to where we tell people in this. More and more people are carrying extra potassium with them because that seems to be what we run into is the horses that they're drinking, but it's not getting it's not changing their hydration status, or we're running into the arrhythmias, and so we're finding that some of them need the extra potassium chloride.
What about calcium?
Well, the there is a bit of calcium in sweat, but we used to think that thumps was the whole thing behind thumps was the calcium, but I think the whole thing behind some thumps is more the chloride. If you keep all if the horse gets enough chloride, and if you're giving him sodium and potassium, then he's got to be getting chloride. If he gets enough chloride, then the negative ions in his system will stay high enough that the calcium doesn't have to, because as I said before, calcium is two positives and chlorine is one negative. When they start losing chlorine, those positive the positive ions of calcium, they've got to balance off with something, and if they can't balance off with chloride, then they will bind. Sodium and potassium won't bind, but calcium will bind to protein, And when the ionized calcium drops in the horse's system, that's what makes them prone to thumps. And so the way to reverse thumps is either to get the horse hydrated again so there's enough chloride ions around that the calcium can move around freely as an ionized form, or give them ionized calcium, but like a source of calcium ion, like calcium gluconate or something, which will ionize quickly in the blood. But if the I don't think that we need to worry about giving our horses calcium. Most of the muscle cramps we see are associated with potassium problems, potassium imbalances. And if you keep the potassium and chloride balanced, then the calcium will stay balanced on its own.
So if you have a horse that's thumping on you and you want to get him out of it fast, what would you suggest?
Electrolytes.
Out of it really fast?
You have an hour.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. Like you're not treating the horse.
I'm at a vet check, and I know my horse is thumping.
Yeah.
And he's prone to this.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you want to get some potassium chloride into him.
Okay. I was thinking light salt sounds like what you really want
yep.
to do.
Yep. 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 The light salt.
I have a question. You mentioned earlier about, you know, when your horse gets to might just want to walk instead of trot and that kind of thing, some of the hundreds. My horse is in pretty good shape, and she gets great scores on hydration. But do you think it's something more electrolytes could help, or is it some, you know, just, I don't know, more conditioning or something else?
Well,
she should be in good shape.
And her recoveries are good?
Oh, yeah.
But she's lacking energy?
Yeah, but she gets there. So did her brother on the hundreds. They get to the point where they'd rather walk, although she will trot more than he did. But
interesting. So you don't think they're getting tired then? You know, because
tired, but nowhere near exhausted.
Yeah. Well, because usually if they're getting tired, then their heart rate, unless they're their blood sugar's dropping, and they're just losing energy. Hmm. Seem bright and alert, or kind of sour?
Maybe a little more sour, but they still have good recoveries and good hydration scores.
Maybe in all we.
I'd be looking at something else. You know, make sure that the horse isn't foot sore or sore back, or you know.
No, I haven't had back problems. They stay sound.
Maybe they just need to be fitter.
Mm-hmm, maybe.
But usually, if the horse is getting tired, then the first thing that happens is the heart rate goes up, and then the length of time to recovery gets prolonged.
Well,
do you ride with a heart rate monitor?
Yeah, usually, but it usually doesn't work by then. They stop working for me at the hundreds. But like, you know, in Oklahoma, she recovered immediately at every check.
I don't know what that would be.
And it sounded like they're stumbling more. Might actually stumble less at rides and less in the dark than they do at home.
They pay better attention at rides.
Yeah, I think so.
Anyhow, could we... this is going on, and it's been very, very useful. And at the same time, I'm kind of looking at the time. Does anybody else have questions? I mean, we can go on this for quite a while, I know. But
I wanted to ask if Art would tell a closing story. And the closing story I was hoping he would tell, since it's electrolyte related, is about the horse that you jumped away from.
Oh, in the Rosie's horse at the Old Dominion.
Oh. Could be. I don't know. Maybe everybody knows the story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was trying to keep up with me. Didn't work.
What's that?
She was trying to keep up with me. And her horse got kind of weird.
Yeah. The three of you were riding together, weren't you?
The two of us. My sister wasn't riding that day. She was crowing.
Yeah, but I meant there were three of you. Wasn't Heather, there was you and Heather Hoynes and Rosie?
Maybe, yeah. At some point we were together.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that was at the Old Dominion. That was the year that Julie Bullock, her two horses were out front, and they actually was
Lynn
Julie and Debbie?
Lynn was
pardon me? What's that?
Lynn Gilbert.
Yeah, Lynn Gilbert. Oh, it was Lynn Gilbert was with you.
And I was 7 seconds behind her because we didn't know the winner had been pulled.
Yes, yes. But that was year Lynn Gilbert won the ride in Calvary because
right.
when she got because Debbie Bullis's horse got pulled at
mm-hmm.
one of the vet checks, and then Julie got pulled at the finish.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, Lynn Gilbert had her completion before. And Julie was waiting to try and get it. So Lynn was sitting there. She said it was kind of mixed emotions. You know, she didn't want Julie not to complete, but she knew that if she didn't, then she would have won it. But anyway, yeah, Rosie's horse. It was an interesting one. I was the head vet that year, and so I was going from one vet check to the next with the front running horses, and I would leave one vet check in order to get to the next vet check when the first horses got there, just to make sure that everything was going well at that vet check, and then I would leave that vet check when I knew that the first horses would be at the next one, and so on. And Rosie, I think, was running fifth, maybe not most of the day, but she got to the point where she was running fifth, certainly through the last half of the ride. And well, back up a step. I had seen that horse when it started the ride, and I remember thinking Rosie's in for one great day because the horse was spinning and wasn't bucking, but it was spinning and tearing off Rosie was trying to control it, and the horse wasn't paying attention. It was trying to go left instead of right, and right instead of left, and back instead of forward, and so on, and that's when they rode out of that corral and through the gate and so on and down the road. It started at the 4-H Center, and I just remember thinking that you know, this horse is in for quite a day. And then at the Little Fort Vet Check, which is what, about 65 miles, the first two horses had gone. It was only a 15-minute hold at that vet check, and the first two horses had gone, and Rosie and Lynn came in. The three horses all came in together, and I in fact vetted Rosie's horse because the other two vets vetted the other two horses, and I vetted Rosie's horse and it seemed all right. And then we're all standing there talking, and we had our backs to where the horses were. They were trying to find what little shade was there, and the riders were there and so on. And all of a sudden, I heard this scream. And before I turned around, I heard this god-awful noise, and I thought that somebody's head had got kicked in. But it turned out that the horse, somebody had hit one of those plastic jugs, you know, they use for water jugs and so on. And that's what I thought was somebody's head and helmet getting crushed. And what had happened was they'd gone to give Rosie's horse electrolytes, and it just went berserk. And I thought, that's odd, you know, a horse at 65 miles, why wouldn't it just stand there and take his electrolytes instead of rearing up and carrying on like that? And then when they went to ride out, for those of you who've been at that Little Fort Vet Check, it's a clearing in the woods, and there's just a narrow way through the brush to get in and out. And the horse rode dead on right into the trees, right? Did you see it, or were you ahead of her?
I think I was ahead of her.
Yeah. Anyway, the horse, instead of following the other horses out, the horse just took off right into the trees with Rosie on her back.
Ooh.
And we thought, this is odd. You know, and then get to the next vet check, and that was 80 miles at the parking lot mm-hmm. there at Bear Wallow, or what's the other name? They keep changing that, the name of... Pickett Springs, yes, Pickett Springs, Bear Wallow.
Before Sherman's.
Yeah, before Sherman's, you're right. Anyway, the two vets were there. I think Stan Eichelberger was one of them. I can't remember who the other was. Anyway, the other two horses that he came in with Rosie, they went up to the vets and basically both about the same time. And Lynn Goldman was crewing for Rosie. And their horse wasn't quite ready. And then they said, oh, pulse. And so I walked over and went to take the horse's pulse. And I'm standing there taking the pulse. And we're off to one side because the vets are using the vetting lane for the two horses that are already there. So we're off to the side, and I'm checking this horse's pulse. And they'd already checked it, and it was down below 64. So I'm counting the pulse, and I've got my stopwatch and counting, and it's going lub-dub, lub-dub. And it's basically about one a second. And after about seven beats, the heart rate starts to speed up and went about like starts going lub-dub, lub-dub, lub-dub. And so I look up. I thought, well, okay, maybe there's somebody coming down the trail. And I don't see anybody, and I look at the horse, and the horse's ears aren't up or anything. He's just standing there, and I thought, what's got this horse's attention? And this all happens like in 2 or 3 seconds, and I look back, like I'm standing at the left side of the horse, and the trail was sort of ahead of me and off to to my left. And so I looked that way, and there was nobody coming, so nothing there getting the horse. So then I'm looking behind to see if, and then I looked at the horse's ears, and he's not paying any attention. I thought, well, maybe here's somebody coming up the driveway or down the road. So I looked back there just to see what was exciting this horse, because I was afraid that he was going to blow his pulse. And those of you who know me know that I like to be fair, and if I see that something's excited the horse unnecessarily, we'll just wait a minute and then take it again once the horse calms down. And when I looked back, the horse's loin muscle on each side of the spine was up knotted just as if there was two baseball bats laying down the horse's back, and it was kind of in a spasm. And of course I'm still got my stethoscope on the horse and standing right close to it, and then I just felt him just coil up like he was going to explode, and I ran. And as I ran, the horse literally did explode, and the people that didn't see me start running thought that I'd got kicked. And the horse, of course, he just exploded and took off. He got away from, I don't even know if anybody was holding me. He may have just been standing there with among the bucket seating and so on. But anyway, he got away, and then we couldn't get near him. Finally did catch the horse. Unfortunately, we didn't have anything to take blood samples there. By the time he got back to base camp, it was probably an hour or whatever, and they took some blood samples and so on and didn't really find anything unusual, and I don't know whether they had to treat the horse or not. But we had a discussion. Matthew happened to be there, and we had a discussion about it afterwards, and there is a condition in cattle, pigs, and dogs, which is a calcium imbalance. And it's associated with whenever they have their young and start to milk, and it's called milk fever in cows and eclampsia in dogs, and there's an agalactia term for it in pigs. But in every one of those conditions, it is a calcium imbalance, a deficiency. And it's associated with the fact that the animals had a calcium level of a certain amount, and then all of a sudden the calcium goes into the milk and their calcium level drops, and it takes time before the body system gets geared up to maintaining the calcium level and being able to produce milk. And there's a percentage of those cases where they get a vicious streak. Sows will attack you when you're trying to treat them. Cows will attack you when you're trying to treat them, and the dogs will bite you. And it's normally a paralytic disease where the animals can't get up, they get weak, that sort of thing. So it's a disease where muscles don't function at all, let alone they can tighten up and lash out. So I don't know whether that horse had a serious calcium imbalance or not. The other thing that happens in animals, magnesium plays an important role in muscle function and spasm in cattle and dogs and people. And we know very, very little about magnesium in horses, so there might be something there as well. And both magnesium and calcium can get out of whack, not because the calcium and magnesium are lost in sweat, but not significant levels. But once again, the balance between magnesium and potassium or magnesium and calcium can get out of whack because they are strong. They've got two pluses, so they're twice as strong from an electrical or anionic standpoint as sodium and potassium. So they're very strong anions. And if you get an imbalance, which you can get with chloride depletion, then it's difficult to say what type of metabolic changes could take place that might cause trouble. But that horse of Rosie's was really interesting, and it would have been interesting to have a blood sample right then and there to see what was going on, because there was certainly something going on. I've never seen muscles on a horse spasm like that. And
so the take-home message there is, if your horse is odd, think about electrolytes.
Yep.
Is that a Rosie Rollins?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah. Whether you get a nervous, like, you know, and there's some athletes will go berserk in marathons and so on, the same thing. All of a sudden whether it's a neurological muscle spasm induced, I don't know, but you know, I mean, why would a horse you're giving a horse electrolytes all day, and all of a sudden it goes berserk because you go to give it electrolytes, and then you get on its back, and why wouldn't it ride out the trail the same way instead of off into the, you know, for those of you who've been to Little Fort, you know what it's like. I mean, you wouldn't even want to walk through those bushes yourself, and this horse just charged right into the bushes with Rosie on her back. There's something wrong.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway.
Where?
And I guess we do this again tomorrow night, do we? It's a board meeting?
Board meeting tomorrow night, yeah.
Yeah. And I hope we have the – will you check with the company that runs that once your conference call system and find out why I couldn't get in?
We'll try.
Yeah. Good thing Stag came up with the idea of using the other code, because I tried about it was maybe – 3 or 4 minutes before, and it gave me that message, and I said, then maybe they've got it set up for, you know, that it doesn't work till a certain time.
No.
So then I kept trying, and then I sent you an email, because and when I went to open up my email, I probably got umpteen emails. Art, where are you? Or I thought maybe everybody was going to say they had trouble, but.
Oh.
And I did get the first time I called after I spoke with Stag, I got a busy signal, but the second time there wasn't a busy signal, and then it let me in as leader, so.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Which is interesting.
You just need you as a leader.
Yeah, well, it was interesting because usually those systems would be set up that once the leader got in, somebody else couldn't get in as the leader, right? So
that's what I thought. But
yeah,
hey.
Or some of them, you can keep dialing in as leader as long as you have the code.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's okay. That's good to know. Okay, folks. Thank you all very, very much. And Art, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, you're most welcome. And I'll talk to you tomorrow night.
Yep.
Good holiday.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.